Tonight we're joined by Alex Greenwich, Dr. Sherlene Robinson and Senator Sarah Hanson-Young to launch the new book, Yes, 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 Australia's Journey to Marriage Equality. I'm delighted to see you all here this evening because I'm very proud to note that the ACT itself recorded the highest yes vote in the country at 74%. Way to go. But before we launch the book, I'd like to begin by just telling you a little bit about Alex Greenwich, who led Australia's marriage equality movement for more than a decade, and he served as both co-chair of Australian Marriage Equality and the successful Yes campaign that really finally delivered marriage equality after many, many years of campaigning. And that's in addition to being the independent member for Sydney in the New South Wales Parliament, which is sitting this week. So we're very delighted that Alex can be here tonight. And he's also internationally respected as a leader in the LGBTIQ rights movement, having addressed legislatures and global conferences in Europe, Asia and North America. And Dr. Sherlene Robinson, also co-author of the book, has volunteered with Australian Marriage Equality since 2012. And during this time, she served as New South Wales co-convener, national spokesperson and board director. And that's in addition to being an associate professor at Macquarie University with a PhD in history. And her previous books include Serving in Silence, Australian LGBT Service Men and Women as a co-author, and Gay and Lesbian Then and Now, Stories from a Social Revolution, also as a co-author. So to launch the book officially, I'm delighted to now hand over to Australian Greens Senator and prominent Yes campaigner in the Parliament over many years, Senator Sarah Hanson-Young.
I feel quite honoured tonight to be here in Canberra to help launch Yes, Yes, Yes. And that's because much of my time in this place, here in the nation's capital, has been talking about this issue. And, you know, while I kind of been able to have the platform in the Parliament to talk about this, it's just amazing to see the absolute dedication and commitment from Sherlene and Alex and their partners, Victor and Sarah, but also many of the other activists right around the country who fought so hard for marriage equality to become real. And it's all very well and good to say, oh, well, you know, politicians, you know, finally voted the right way and we got it done 12 months ago. But we didn't actually get it done in the way that it should have happened. We should have dealt with it much earlier than it happened. We should have been able to be a bit more courageous in the Parliament. But the final vote in the Parliament happened because people right across this country were so committed to campaigning on it. And that's what this book really is about. I know there's been a lot of celebration over the last week about the 12-month anniversary of marriage equality coming to reality, but actually the fight for this has been much, much longer. And that's what this book is all about. I think, Sarah, as a historian, you can really tell... Sorry, Sherlene, as a historian, you can really tell how much effort you've put into wanting to tell that story honestly and in a way that gives a lot of credit to all of the other people who will never know, you know, their own stories. The people who got this over the line in the end were sons and daughters and mums and dads and grandparents who had had enough of people in their family or in their friendship group or in their workplace being treated as second-class citizens. And they decided that really this was a human rights issue. This was an issue of equality. And of course, above all else, it's an issue of love. And so as well as the historical elements in this book, this is actually a gorgeous story of friendship, love and genuine commitment. Commitment to the issue, but commitment to individuals and their loved ones. Alex, we've known each other for a very long time. We met, Alex and I, it's in this book. I had to go back and, you know, when somebody writes a book that you know, you go to the back page to see how many times you're referenced. Alex has put in this book about the first time that we met, and we met in 2009 at a marriage equality rally. And at that time, while we could feel that the public support for marriage equality was there, it was just not getting through to the corridors of Parliament at all. It wasn't even getting through to many of the individual members who then actually ended up stepping forward and campaigning really hard for this. But it was inevitable, and I remember having that conversation with you, that this was a fight that we were going to win. Even back in 2009, we knew we were on the right side of history on this. At that time, the Labor Party had just passed a motion at their conference, which was kind of quite dismissive of marriage equality. We had we didn't know at that point, but there was going to be a leadership change from Kevin Rudd to Julie Gillard, and then we had a Prime Minister, an atheist Prime Minister, an unmarried woman who thought we've got to have our champion for marriage equality in the Prime Ministership, and that didn't happen. There was lots of ups and downs as this campaign went forward, the 10 years that I was directly involved, but even before then. And I think it's really important to document that, because social change happens when good people stand up and fight for it. It doesn't happen just because. So even though Alex and I, back in 2009 when we met, thought the issue was inevitable and that we were on the right side of history, it actually only came about because people fought for it. And as somebody that was involved at the time in the Parliament, but then also engaging with activists on a regular basis over this, I could see the shift of people who had previously been opposed and then not so opposed, didn't really mind that much, and then became wonderful, strong advocates. And that is how social change happens. If we all just stick to our views all the time, nothing would get better. And I say that as somebody who's always believed in marriage equality. I'm from a family in a generation where I couldn't fathom why we would treat people differently. Why would there be one set of rules and laws for a couple over here just because they happen to be man and woman, and another set over here for two men or two women? That just never made sense to me. I could understand why churches might be opposed, but I couldn't understand why the law was discriminating against those couples. But rather than me having my view and thinking, okay, this is always right, actually the most empowering thing was seeing people's views change. And one of the people I distinctly remember having a conversation with when I was moving bills and kind of out there in the media talking about this issue, I was on a flight coming back from Canberra to Melbourne, and I happened to be sitting next to Jeff Kennett. And he'd seen me. I must have been talking about marriage equality recently, or in that time. And he said to me, Sarah, I've been thinking about this. I think maybe we should do something about this issue of marriage equality, because it sends the wrong message to young gay and lesbians that they're not equal. And this is when he had just started to get involved in the mental health issue relating to young people, and post his life in politics. And that conversation made me sit up and think, oh, views are changing. And isn't that a more powerful story to tell than a story of, say, my own or somebody else who's always had the same position? Transforming one's view, accepting new information, understanding that things have to change for the right reasons. That's what progressive politics is about. That's what progressive society is about. I distinctly remember looking at Jeff Kennett at that time and going, this is actually going to happen now. And it's going to happen because people like him were willing to not just change their mind, but then be open and talk about changing their mind. And that's what we saw throughout the marriage campaign. And I know there's been so much attention put on the postal vote, and we saw that in a very direct, open way. A lot of people I know were impacted by the very public nature of having such a public vote, a survey on their love and their relationship and their status. But one of the most positive things to come out of that is seeing people proudly being able to say that they'd voted yes. In the midst of that postal campaign, the amount of events I went to and totally separate things, nothing to do with marriage equality, I would have people come up and say, oh, I got my dad to vote yesterday. Or I sat down with my grandma and she's voting yes. That is the power, the transformative power of a campaign that wins the hearts and minds of people. And this issue did. And the wonderful thing about capturing it and the history of that, I think, is because it's not just important for this issue. When I say this as a proud progressive, we've got to learn from this campaign. Progressive reform can happen in this country if we are united, if we're willing to engage with people who perhaps don't have the same view as us at that point in time, and sell a positive message. When I was out advocating on marriage equality and talking to people like Alex, and you know, we have a loss of a bill in the parliament, and it felt so easy to be upset and angry and disappointed. How can you be angry and upset and disappointed when you're talking about a reform that makes love equal? It is a positive message to sell. And at the same time as doing that, I was doing things on immigration reform and in other areas, and it's pretty hard to be positive about trying to get kids out of detention. So it was always a welcome release and a relief to be able to go and speak at a marriage equality rally or to go and hear the strategic and wonderful campaigning activities that were coming out of the marriage equality campaign, because it was a beacon of light and hope. And when we won, do you remember the amazing sense of pride and just joy here in this city on the night that those survey results came back? And not only did ACT get the highest result, but you also threw the biggest party. It was just an amazing thing to be part of. And as somebody who, you know, spent 10 years in the parliament with all of the privilege that comes with being able to introduce bills and pass amendments and debate things, I felt so empowered as a citizen, as an Australian, on that day and on that night. And that sounds crazy because I sit in the parliament where these laws should just be able, we should have been able to debate it and we should have got it through. However, just the absolute excitement and pride knowing that Australia had really done this properly, because we got a good result, and the transformative nature of that. There's been a bit of a debate about discrimination in schools over the last few months. The public backlash to the idea that we would still discriminate against gay teachers or kids who are struggling with their sexuality in schools. And the public backlash to that was swift and it was loud. And we now have both major parties in a bit of a tiz about it. I put it to you that that has happened because of this reform. We have moved a significant step forward, and that will never be taken away now. And I think as a activist and as an advocate for progressive politics, I'm now challenged to think about how we can harness the power and the strategy and the commitment of this campaign to make sure we can win some others, because as you all know, there's some pretty big issues out there that we desperately need a win on. Right. Over to you, Alex and Sherlene. Thank you for writing this wonderful book. It's an incredible capture of the important history, and it allows us to celebrate not just the bad times when it was felt like we were going to lose, but to give us hope that even when those things happen, ultimately good people make good things happen and you can win. Thank you.
So to ask you two as the authors, I thought I might start by asking Alex, you to reflect on, I guess, that moment of culmination of the campaign when we got that return from the plebiscite. And Sherlene, perhaps if you could talk a little bit about the importance of the history and what that campaign was built on.
That moment where we heard the result was quite an overwhelming moment. The Marriage Equality Campaign is one of a series of setbacks where we sought to keep on empowering people and encouraging people to take action. Mm. And obviously the final setback was the announcement of the postal survey. This was something that we tried to stop in the High Court. We lost. We had tried to encourage legislation to be debated in the Parliament with Senator Dean Smith's bill. We weren't able to achieve that. So in Sydney, where I was that day, there was a lot of anxiety. There was a lot of stress and tension as to what that result was going to be. And people were hopeful. You know, we had done polling for a decade that showed a majority of Australians supported marriage equality. The Australian Institute had done polling for a very long time, and we're grateful for your consistent support. There's some really good specific electorate by electorate polling, which really helped.
Tony Abbott's electorate.
Indeed, along the way, which proved to be true. But at that moment, when that result came out, there was this immense feeling of relief, of joy and celebration. For me, there was a strong feeling that you can trust Australians to do the right thing when our politicians let you down. Of course, at that moment, it was not over yet. Mm. We still had to have the legislative legislative debate. And I think that Claire Dawson, who was our political director, is probably coming tonight, or she's on her way. And in the book, she tells this wonderful story of, you know, when that result came out, it was great, but it was pretty much... What did she say, Shalini?
It was so not over.
It was not over yet.
Yeah. She poured herself a glass of wine and said it's not over yet.
Yes. Yeah. That must have been quite disconcerting, I guess, but we might come back to the vote in a little bit. But Shirlene, can you just reflect for us? Obviously, it was a campaign for over many years and really standing on the shoulders of many campaigners. Mm-hmm. What was the start of the marriage equality campaign like? Where did it come from?
Well, I think it obviously drew on decades of LGBTI activism that, you know, went back to the 60s and before that. But particularly the group that Alex and I have been involved with, Australian Marriage Equality, it began in 2004. And it literally began with, I think, 14 people on a phone hookup. You can imagine the climate at that time, huge opposition. I think there was around 38% support for marriage equality in this country. And I'm so proud and pleased. And she's probably not going to like me for saying this, but one of those 14 people is with us tonight. So I would like to acknowledge Geraldine Donoghue, who very kindly shared her story. So, and those 14 people, I think, played a really important role in standing up and saying, no, this isn't right, that the Marriage Act is being changed. And other people across Australia joined them from different groups, different parts of the country, allies and so on. Geraldine's story is in the book. Her partner, Beck, they did, I think, the first rally in Brisbane where they had something like 10 people turn up, but they still did that and they still had that presence. And I think that enormous courage and that enormous... belief in justice and fairness really was something that marked the movement all the way through. So I always find the stories of very early activism when things looked so impossible incredibly moving. But yes, obviously, as Alex said, there's been many ups and downs, and I think that something that Sarah touched on when she was speaking as well is just that we know that in the book we'll never be able to know all the people who contributed to this reform. I mean, it was something that went for 13 years, and at its height during the postal survey, I think there were 15,000 volunteers activated across the country. So just when I think about AME with 14 people on a telephone call to 15,000 people active across the country, it's an unimaginable journey and something that was extraordinary to research and to be a small part of.
And Alex, I just want to pick up on some your comments earlier about taking it to the High Court to prevent the plebiscite. For those who might not know, what were the concerns of the movement about taking that approach? Obviously, it's less preferable to many other countries just legislated mm-hmm. for it, but what was problematic about that?
Well, it's interesting. Internationally, other countries have achieved marriage equality either by a parliamentary vote, a public vote, or a court challenge. We had all three, and we actually had two high court challenges, and I'll talk about the other one in a second. But we, you know, we had defeated the original plebiscite proposal, which was voted down in the Senate. There was a great deal of concern that we would be giving a national platform to basically a nationwide homophobic and transphobic campaign and the impact that that would have on people. We knew that we did not need a postal survey or a plebiscite to achieve marriage equality. Public support had been the majority for a decade, but it shouldn't matter what the public support was. We were talking about the rights of a minority group who should be able to marry the person they love in the country that they love. And we'd been working so hard for so long to get a majority in Parliament, and we got there. What we didn't have was a majority in the coalition party room who were prepared to say, no, let's show some courage and let's just get this done in the Parliament. Unfortunately, we lost in the High Court. But the amazing resilience, through a very tough time of the campaign and the wider community, we lost. We were literally handing out flyers the next day, determined to win the yes vote. But we were proven right. You know, the campaign of the opponents was particularly tough. Mm. It was one where they did target the most vulnerable members of our community with front page ads and national television campaigns, and that hurt and trauma still exists today. So we were right to call that out, and we were right to take it to the High Court. But of course, that wasn't the first High Court challenge. The first High Court challenge from the federal government was in response to the ACT legislating for same-sex marriage. And we actually have at least two of the 31, and Anne-Marie and Meg, who got married here, and Anne-Marie was an active part of the campaign as well over a very long period of time. The federal government intervened. We unfortunately lost. Fortunately, though, AME did seek to get a ruling from the High Court to show that the Parliament could actually legislate for it. Mm-hmm. So that meant that the Parliament had the power to do it. But they obviously didn't want to demonstrate that power. They gave it to this. They outsourced it to the Australian people.
Mm. And so going back to your point about just the sheer number of people involved in the campaign by the end, and it really did take that kind of people's movement to force Parliament's hand. Can you just reflect for me a little bit on, I guess, a little bit of what both Sarah was talking about and you earlier, of the diversity of the movement itself and how it had to end up embracing, I guess, more unlikely voices or people who perhaps weren't quite all the way along the journey. How did that work?
I think obviously we would have rather this be legislated in Parliament. You know, there was popular support for this in 2007, so it would have been nice if it had been done that way. But the path that we went down did mean that we did have a nationwide vote on this particular issue, and that meant that we needed support from everybody, from all quarters, and it was quite exceptional and outstanding to see where that support came from. Claire Dawson, I think, who Alex mentioned beforehand, is now, I think, in the room. So, but it literally was everyone from corporate Australia through to community campaigners. There were, during the postal survey, there were some really beautiful stories about parents, I think, in particular. On the Sunshine Coast, there was a mum and a dad who spent 3 days handing out thousands of leaflets saying vote yes. I mean, they shouldn't have had to have done that, but the way that people did stand up for their LGBTIQ friends and families during that period was extraordinary. In the campaign headquarters that we were based at, a lot of people may not realise this, but we benefited in a terrible sort of a way from the what was beautiful, but also very horrible for the people who'd gone through this. A lot of people don't know that Recognise, which was a campaign that was about recognition for Indigenous people in the Constitution, it has to be a public vote for that issue to be resolved. That campaign had been dismantled just as we were facing our High Court situation. And those Indigenous campaigners who had gone through something so difficult and something so necessary for us as a country did not hesitate to stand with us and to lend us their campaigning expertise to see this through. And I think that was just one of the most extraordinary, courageous and inspiring things that I've seen, that allyship and that the shoulder-to-shoulder support that was given. And I think that it is a debt that must be repaid, and certainly I think we should all work towards that. It's very important.
Yeah, before we move to questions from the audience, Alex, I just wondered if you could reflect a little bit on, I guess, the shifting of the politics in Parliament and how important it was to get people from across the different parties on board and being public, and how difficult was it to find those people and persuade them to be public in the end.
Yeah, that was I mean, extremely hard by the nature that we ended up having a postal survey to achieve it. The first vote that I witnessed was on Sarah's 2009 bill, I think. Sarah has the record of having the most marriage equality bills in our parliament. I think you had like 9 or so over the years.
Stubborn.
But at that time, there were only 5 Greens in the Senate, and there were only 5 votes for marriage equality. But we needed to put it to a vote. That was the very first time. There had been previous bills, but it was the very first time that it had been put to a vote. We needed to show that the parties would be held to account. And there was, we reflect on this in the book, there from a wonderful interview which we did with Sarah. There was this moment after Sarah had done a really powerful speech. The Shadow Attorney General at the time, George Brandis, had given a speech strongly opposing marriage equality. Then he came over to Sarah at the end and said, like, good on you.
Keep going.
There was also this amazing movement, and we've got a whole chapter dedicated to it, to the advocacy within the Labor Party, and particularly the Rainbow Labor movement, who were so fierce and effective in getting to changing their party platform and building support internally. And then indeed within the coalition. We were in Brisbane the other week with Sue Boyce, who was the first Liberal to vote for marriage equality in support of one of Sarah's bills. She crossed the floor before she left the parliament to support marriage equality. So we had to keep on breaking through these partisan barriers, which was hard. It was impossible. But I knew we had done it when there was this wonderful moment in the lead-up to the vote in the Senate where Claire, who was who worked in the Howard government in the Whip's office, Joe Scales, who was a union leader from South Australia, were both working together doing the numbers in the Greens party room. So it was this amazing coordination of allies from across the political spectrum working together to get this done.
Well, that certainly sounds wonderful, and I myself did some door knocking for the Yes campaign here in Canberra, and I've done door knocking in the past politically, and let me tell you, I've never been greeted with such enthusiasm as we were. People were like opening their doors saying, we've been waiting for you to come, you know, talk to us and use our votes. And so it was very positive, I think, in many ways, despite some of the drawbacks there, and certainly here in the ACT, as we've mentioned.
First of all, congratulations. It was a long time coming. I know many of our neighbours, immediate neighbours, were very, very happy to see it pass. I was overseas and just glued to my little iPhone and slow internet, and I cried when it passed. So thank you and everybody here who worked for it. Sarah, you said something earlier about lessons learned. And you also are deeply involved with immigration and the asylum seekers and refugees. I'd be interested from all three of you, what are your top lessons learned and how can we use those in the campaign to get the kids off, everybody off, and close Manus and Nauru?
When I said there's some lessons to be learned on some big issues, that is obviously one that is front of mind for me. I actually think, and Alex doesn't give himself enough credit for this, but you can see it when you read the book, but you can also see it with the people that he surrounds himself with. Alex has got an ability to engage with people across the political spectrum, and you're an amazing broker, really. And I think a broker of ideas, but also of showing that at the end of the day, there were people... And there was a lot of people in the campaign who helped you do this, but I think you really did lead the idea of kind of picking who are the low-hanging fruits in each of the parties to come to a consensus position and say, okay, well, you can live with this, you can live with this, you can live with this, so that we can take each step forward. When it comes to the immigration issue, there's no one driving that. If I'm absolutely honest, there isn't. It's all or nothing. And what ends up happening is nothing means we've got children still locked up on Nauru for the last 6 years. The kids that are there now, I saw when I visited them, 5 years ago. And I know there are decent people in Labor and in Liberal who don't want them there. So we actually need somebody to come in and do a bit of whipping. So I don't know, Claire, if you're up for the job. but of course, an obvious other issue is we've got to get serious about climate change too. That in itself is going to require people from all sides realising that, we often, just because I feel like we're in a position in politics right now where we oppose things because somebody else put the idea up. And it is crazy. I love being on the crossbench because I don't think I've got all the right answers, actually. And I don't think anybody does. I want to see minority governments so people are forced to debate and work together. So.
For me, the biggest takeaway is you just don't take no for an answer. and you just keep on going. If something is worth having, it's worth fighting for. Mm-hmm. I'm next week flying to Bangkok and going to participate in sort of a strategy meeting of marriage equality campaigns in Asia. And they asked me what I would like to talk about, and I said to them, I would like to talk about losing, because we lost a lot. And it's how you lose that makes all the difference. It's how you turn a setback into an opportunity, and you keep people determined. And the fact that, as Shirlene said, we were able to go from 14 people to 15,000 people shows that the efforts of the wider marriage equality movement were successful in not taking no for an answer until we finally got to yes.
Yeah. Shirlene?
I think that the power of coalitions, that you can't do this alone, and that it is all about sort of working together, and that we are much stronger together. And that's something I think that we've seen all throughout, whether it be the photo that Alex mentioned of Claire and Joe together in the Greens party room. That's wonderful. But also allies that stood with us, whether that be the older campaigners who had worked on law reform for LGBTIQ people in other ways, mums and dads, heterosexual allies. It really did take everyone to get this across the line. So I think that message of standing stronger together is something that I would take away. Also, relentless positivity. I think Alex always had this remarkable ability, and I think that a lot of that did come because you did have such a loving husband, and also your very strong friendship with Sarah, which I think probably helped you through some tough times. But he did always have this remarkable ability to keep us in the most depressing of situations, hopeful and full of belief that, it was just around the corner and we were almost about to break through and get there. So even when the coalition came up with the idea of a plebiscite for the first time, somehow Alex managed to make it seem that it would be okay, and that if we just stayed together and stayed positive, we'd get through it. And he was proved to be right. So I think positivity was also important.
The amount of people who would describe, I'd say, Alex Grenade, which is, the campaign, go-getter for marriage equality, and they go, oh, the guy who's always smiling. And you still are.
Yes, he's always smiling.
Lots more reasons now.
Interested to hear a bit more about these so many bills that were put forward. Was there a pattern to that? Was there an evolution in the wording of those bills?
There was a slight evolution of wording, but not a huge difference, to be honest. The main thing was the number of people who abstained from the vote grew each time. And so that allowed the campaigners to go and go, OK, well, there's something to work with here. We've got another potential ally in the parliament. And it was kind of being able to show that every time there was a vote, it actually increased. And that was important for sustaining the positivity, but also making sure that even in the Parliament, there was a spotlight always on you still being held to account here.
One of there was one or two different iterations of legislation. Sarah's bill was probably the most straightforward bill, which just sought to change from man and woman to two people. We also, once that had been knocked back, and internationally a lot of countries were embracing marriage equality, Sarah did a bill on recognising overseas married couples in Australia. That was the bill that Sue Boyce voted for, so that was slightly different. And that was probably the closest vote that we got in the Parliament. Of course, right before the results of the yes vote came out, Senator James Patterson said that he was going to release a bill, which was a dog's breakfast full of increasing discrimination against the LGBTI community, and it would seek to, you know, basically turn what was a move to reduce discrimination into a move to increase discrimination. He ended up turning basically the No campaign's talking points into a bill. Then he turned that into amendments to the Dean Smith bill. But it was a wonderful thing to see all those amendments being voted down one by one. Again, in the book, we talk about what a proud moment that was, particularly for Penny Wong. So Penny had seen the support for marriage equality grow within her party over time, from opposition to allowing a conscience vote, but still opposition to allowing a conscience vote, but supporting. The Labor Party voted as a bloc against all of those amendments, despite the fact that they were constantly heckled by government members, and each and every amendment got voted down because of that discipline that occurred in the Labor Party joining the Greens and other crossbenchers in voting down all of those amendments. All the bills were slightly different in different ways. Sarah's bill was probably the most straightforward bill. Dean's bill was the result of a detailed Senate inquiry process. And we finally got a product that does allow same-sex and gender-diverse couples to marry. And that was a good feeling when that finally passed.
I think I would just say to that I think I was probably the last person involved, certainly Australian marriage equality, to believe that bill would pass, because there had been, you know, after 22 times you do start to lose a bit of optimism and a bit of faith. So everyone else, I think, knew that would be the one that would go through. But being in Parliament and watching from the galleries, seeing it go through the Senate, I was in the press club when that happened, so I didn't see that bit. But certainly being in the House of Representatives, that was a very long, drawn-out day. And, it just seemed like people who knew that they were going to lose the vote were trying to just delay the positive outcome for as long as they possibly could. So in the end, people who were sitting in the benches watching this knew if you got up to go and get a glass of water or anything to eat, you would lose your seat and you wouldn't possibly see this historic moment happen. So it was just a very strange, strange sort of feeling, I think. But, that bill, it was very special. And, obviously people started to sing when it passed. That was really unexpected and quite wonderful. But I don't think it really sunk in until actually we were driving out of Canberra the next day that this had actually been achieved and we had actually gotten there.
Just thinking back, I've only been involved in the campaign for the last 5 years, so not the whole time, but it seems to me one of the key aspects of the fight was demonstrations and getting out on the streets. And there's all, like, you know, as we've sort of been speaking about tonight, there's all different types of actions and all different aspects to the campaign. But it seems to be that one of the key backbones was the demonstrations. And I think one of the reasons, like, that, you know, the right, the Conservatives at the moment feel quite weak and our side feels quite strong, was that sense of responsibility and that sort of sense of, well, we've all won it together, that came from the campaign last year, with the huge demonstrations, the posters up everywhere. So demonstrations were important last year, but then again, for the 13 years before that, to keep it an issue. So I was just wondering if maybe what you thought about, you know, what made demonstrations, you know, so important and such a key part of the campaign.
I'm glad that you sort of mentioned that because, you know, I think it was in Sydney 30,000 people came out at the height. But certainly, you know, I mentioned earlier that I am from Brisbane, so the demonstration, the first that was organised by Geraldine and Beck in 2005 that had, you know, around 10 people, to go from that to something that had, you know, 15,000, 20,000 people in Brisbane is unimaginable to me. And yeah, scenes in Melbourne with 20,000 people, Sydney 30,000 people. I mean, it was unbelievable, and I think what that did over the 13 years was that it did that constant visibility, that constant sign that this was an issue that wasn't going away, that there was growing support for it. One of our friends, Malcolm, who shares his story in the book, talks about, I think, being at a rally in Sydney where he had to hire a ute and stood on the back of a ute, and I think there were about 800 people in 2006 or something like that, and then he was on the stage in Prince Alfred Park, and I'm not sure how many people were in that park that results day, but it was certainly not 800. So I think that that momentum and that pressure that showed that this was going to keep happening, and the diversity of people that were coming out and supporting it in those forums. So you did have everyone, literally, you could look around in the Sydney rally, for example, which I saw, and just the diversity of the crowd was absolutely extraordinary.
The rallies were critical to the movement and the ultimate success. People, LGBTI, our allies, were angry and they didn't know what they could do because they kept on being disappointed by what was happening in federal parliament. What they could do was take to the streets. What they could do was join thousands and tens of thousands of other people and broadcast that message across national media in a way that only a massive rally could do. They started small, but they got huge. The diversity that we would see at rallies right across the country was just awe-inspiring. The colourful placards with clever messages, and I'd love to, if I could think of a few really cool ones now, but everybody knows that there were so many cool and creative ones that were out there, hugely effective in sending a message that this was motivating people to take to the streets and to demand action from our politicians. And, you know, the what was really interesting, and I think for the rally organisers in Sydney, and I can't speak for the ones in Canberra, initially it was impossible to get politicians to come and want to speak at rallies for marriage equality. In Sydney, our Lord Mayor, Clover Moore, spoke at the first one in 2004, but she was the only politician. Then by the end, there was a speaking list that had to be negotiated because everybody wanted to speak at those rallies. So that is also a sign of success.
Sarah, did you want to add anything?
I'd just say my favourite placard was "Jesus has two dads."
He turned out all right.
So we passed the survey, and we're helping out the schools deal with the accepting the LGBTIQ community. What's next on the agenda?
Well, I think there's still a long way to go in terms of making sure that trans and gender diverse people have full recognition. So that's an ongoing process. Unfortunately, the No campaign did direct a lot of their targeting and really untruthful and cruel campaign towards them. So, and a lot of basic rights to recognise the dignity of the trans and gender diverse community that must be worked on. For me personally, I feel very strongly about Indigenous constitutional recognition and making sure that Indigenous people have equal opportunities as the first Australians. I think that's critical. But also we've raised a lot of the other social issues as well. So I think that what the amazing takeaway from this campaign has been is that a whole lot of young people, as a result of the marriage equality campaign, really became engaged and started to see that they could make a difference and they could speak up and they could change history. And I hope that that does flow through and that other young people see that you can make a difference by working together and speaking up and raising your voice.
In terms of the LGBTI space, there is work to remove targeted discrimination against the LGBTI community in laws, state and federal. There is a lot of work to do in the trans and gender diverse space in terms of the way in which the medical profession can interact with that community and in terms of legal protections and recognition that needs to happen. Building on from what Shirlene said, the other really important what's next, I hope, after the marriage equality campaign is that people do stay engaged in political process. People attended their very first rally ever because of marriage equality. People made their very first submission to a parliamentary inquiry because of marriage equality. They lobbied their MP for the first time because of marriage equality. They door knocked for the first time because of this issue. Keep it up. We have a lot more challenges ahead of us. So I hope that people can be motivated by the success that ultimately came from that engagement and continue to engage in our political process, because marriage equality was a time when you saw the Australian people deliver the leadership that we weren't getting from federal parliament, and we need to keep on doing that.
Sarah?
I think both Shirlene and Alex have answered that question really well. The only thing I would add is I think now Australia, because we've dealt with this reform here, we've got an opportunity to make sure we do more internationally as well. And the threats, the very real life threats to gay and lesbians in other places around the world is actually growing, not decreasing. And I think Australia needs to do more. We need to do more in our diplomatic sense, and we need Australia's voice to be louder in various different international forums. I just note, I know there was a petition that was being handed out at the beginning when we came in, and this is about making sure that young gay people who visit Australia aren't deported back to places where it's illegal simply because you happen to love somebody of the same sex.
Maybe this is a provocative question, but I'm really interested to see what you'll say. Marriage equality started as a controversial idea, obviously became overwhelmingly popular, and we had the great yes result. I, of course, voted yes against arbitrary discrimination in law. But I'm interested to see what you think about the idea of abolishing marriage as a legal construct. It's not obvious to me why the state should have the role that it currently has in legislating or regulating private relationships in this way. What do you think about the idea of making marriage a purely cultural construct and leaving the law out of it?
I guess I would say, as a historian, I think that the meaning of marriage has changed and evolved a lot over time. I think that it was easier for us to work on a campaign to win marriage equality rather than to remove marriage from society. I think that what was really interesting, and this was something that I will give great credit to the very early campaigners for marriage equality, was that they saw that by asking for marriage equality, you could achieve a lot of other things on the way as well. And that was a very powerful vision. So I really respect people who saw that in 2004. So a lot of what was seen as concessions were given, but were very important in terms of relationship recognition and other matters as well. So I don't think I have it in me to campaign for the abolition of marriage. But look, I, as a historian, I certainly understand that it's an evolving institution. You look back to a time when Protestants and Catholics getting married was controversial. You look to a time when, in the 1940s, it was possible for 14-year-olds to get married to much, much older men. Marriage has changed. I think as an institution, it's become something that is much more positive. And I think the question and the reason it was important for me was simply because why should people who are growing up and who are members of the LGBTIQ community receive that message that what they feel is not equal if they can't access the same legal rights as other people? So that's why it mattered to me.
I'll answer this question in a really personal way. I did not need the Marriage Act to change to consider myself married to my husband. Vic and I are married regardless of what the federal parliament says. What offended me was there was a law that said I couldn't do something because I am gay. And the message that sent to me and to the wider LGBTI community, there should be no law in this country that says you can't do something because of your sexuality or gender status. And we've got to work to remove all forms of discrimination as a starting point. Now, obviously, I didn't talk about that during the campaign. That doesn't really sell it well. But that is, that is truly, truly how I felt.
Sarah?
Well, I have been both married and divorced, so I guess I can see the point, Tom. However, I also I've always believed that the institution itself is important. And if I didn't think it was important, then I wouldn't have spent a long time advocating that other people should be part of it. I think the reason, you didn't say to abolish it altogether. Your question was about what role the state has. It would still exist as a cultural institution, is my understanding. I actually think the state has an important role of understanding how, as people, we relate to each other and we hold each other accountable and we look after each other. And I think the institution of marriage is part of that. And where the law and the role of government, from time to time, yes, it evolves, but ultimately it's what we as a community think it should be the standard for how we treat each other. And marriage is a symbol of that, about respect, about love, about equality in the marriage. I think one of the questions about where we go next, well, I'd like us to be actually talking about how we teach young people what respectful relationships actually look like. And that means, from school-aged children. The treatment of women in our society is still a problem, and that will not change without teaching young boys how we think and want them to engage with the girls and the young girls and the women and their mums and their sisters and the other women in their lives.
So just to wrap up, I wondered if I could ask you each to reflect on one, I'm sure there were many, but one of your favourite moments from the campaign or one of the more joyous moments.
I'll talk about one of the saddest moments in sort of a happy moment.
Go for it.
I'm a politician, so I don't necessarily need to answer the question that was asked. I've learned that. For me, that final day on the 7th of December, when the legislation was finally being passed, was an intense mix of emotions. Shirlene and I walked up to Parliament together that day, and we were met by, the most amazing group of advocates who had been campaigning long and hard for a very long time. We knew the bill was going to pass. It was happening. And I was struck with this complex emotional response of absolute joy that this was finally occurring after spending a decade advocating with so many other people for it, and a sense of grieving that the family that had been built across this movement was dispersing now. Our purpose was no more.
Yeah.
And of course we need to keep on doing a lot, and there's a lot more work to do, but right there in that moment, it was this really intense mix of grief as well as joy. And the day ended with Sarah and I as part of a press conference, which seemed to be like the longest press conference in the world. And at a certain point, after the bill had been achieved, and of course, just like the rallies, every politician wanted to talk. Something just came over me. I walked out midway through the broadcast. Sarah followed me, concerned, what was happening. And I just had this feeling that I needed to get back to Sydney and I needed to get back to Vic, my husband. Sarah, as skillful as she is, called the Qantas Chairman's Lounge, made sure that they were able to hold the plane, got me in a car, and I made the last
flight. And
your
phone was flat.
And my phone was flat, so she had to call Vic and tell him that I was coming. So it was a really weird day, and so there's something to reflect on there for me. But also a really wonderful moment was on the 15th, once we had won that vote, I came to Canberra for the awesome street party that occurred, and waiting for me at during the street party was Sarah and Tim Wilson, who are probably the two politicians I became closest with. As diverse as the two of them are, they were both there with a very tall glass of wine, and it was just a wonderful moment to celebrate with them at that point.
Sarah, memorable moment?
I think that night actually is probably one of the happiest, I think, in the campaign. I just remember thinking, we've done this now. And I know, Claire was saying, it's not over, and but I was... Damn it, I was going to celebrate. I really felt like whatever happened next, the politicians would be held to account. If we failed at that point to not pass a bill, we were going to cop it at the back. Everyone on it was. And so there was this immense sense in my mind that the nation had already changed. And that was the joy. That was the pride that came with that. But second to that actually was getting my ballot paper in the mail, and my daughter, who's 11, she was 10 at the time, running out to the mailbox to get it. She was so happy to be part of this process. And I was watching, you know, we opened it up together, and, you know, she wanted to tick the yes box. And from that day onwards, every day when she came home from school, she said, oh, such and such's parents voted yes, such and such's parents. And she was out there campaigning with her friends in the schoolyard. And I thought, this is an amazing opportunity to teach a young person that, and her whole class and all of her friends, and that change can happen and you can be part of it. And I think that positive, actually getting a win, is so incredible. Mm. When the vote came out and the result, she said, oh, 61, I really wanted it to be 100, Mum. Why isn't it 100? And I said, honey, we won. She's like, yeah, but next time it's going to be 100.
Charlene?
I guess for me, I'd say two things I reflect on in a really positive way. The first was that I think, you know, last year was such a bizarre year. It's almost impossible to talk about what it was like. I mean, literally going Australian Marriage Equality went to the High Court, and then we lost that, and then it was on, the postal survey was on, and, you know, not knowing what kind of response would come from people, but actually seeing people stick up, you know, rainbow flyers, to actually have reinforcements who came and were there with new energy and who had been building the groundwork. So, yeah, like people like Claire in Parliament who recharged us, I think, and re-energised us, were really, really important. The team from Recognise, people like Tim Gartrell, Joseph Scales, just having all those people who came in and kind of lifted us up when we really needed it, that was a really positive memory. But I think for me, I never obviously wanted it to go to a public vote, but being in Brisbane and sort of having that Joe Biocchi-Peterson's state, the only part in the British world, I believe, that tried to criminalise lesbianism was during the Joe Biocchi-Peterson era, so it did fail, but he did think about doing it. To be there on that day and to hear that Queensland had returned a yes vote and that the yes vote was actually quite high was really amazing and unexpected, I think, for all of us. And Peter Black, the Queensland director, I think, may have made some comments about state of origin, but, you know, that it was an extraordinary moment, and I think by the time the bill passed, none of us really had any serotonin left. It was a real roller coaster.